Podcast Network Asia. Hi, everybody. I'm Edric.
I'm Joy.
Welcome to
Family Unboxed,
where we talk about everything family, from the light stuff, the fun stuff, to even the heavy and controversial stuff. Because our desire is to encourage families and see the world changed
one family at a time.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of
Family Unboxed.
And today, Joy is going to do the questioning. She's going to ask me questions about family and a specific area, which we feel has not really been focused on so far in this podcast series, but it's very important. So, baby, take it away.
Yeah, hi. It's like an interview. I was thinking we should talk about how it's so important for fathers to come alongside their sons to mentor them. Because, you know, in the developmental stages, right? After the age of six, the children, the boys especially, start to gravitate more towards the father figure. And they're looking for a father figure. Before then, they're closer to the mom. But then after that, they start looking for a father to guide them, to show them what it means to be a man. So you didn't always get this, right? At what point did you realize that the kids, the boys, our three sons, because we have three daughters after our three sons, but the boys really started to need you and your mentoring?
Right. So I noticed it not just in encountering the kids, but also in hearing other fathers speak about this and bring data out there. For example, a good resource is The World Needs a Father by Cassie Carstens. He's a South African guy. And he writes some interesting stuff and very scary stuff about the importance of fathers and how it's really lacking in the world today. So whether it is towards the sons or towards the children in general, it is something very important. There's other resources like Ambassador Gregory Slayton, who also wrote a book, a former ambassador rather, out of the US, who wrote a book on fatherhood as well. And, you know, how important it is. So all of this to say that I started noticing more and more the importance of a father outside through resources like that, through other dads like that who came and we heard them speak live, but also inside where, you know, I look at the fathering that I experienced from my dad and the father I experienced from my dad-in-law and how it's very different. You know, I think my father clearly influenced my formative years, my biological dad, I call him Papa, but my father-in-law helped me really through my adult years as I, you know, in my married years, a large part of his influence on my life has shaped the man also that I have become today. So I have been blessed to have those dads, but I've also learned from some of their mistakes, right? Wounds that I've experienced and things that I didn't want to repeat with my sons because I actually saw it happening. So for example, my father, I don't think he was malicious in doing this. I was the eldest son. I am the eldest son, the only boy. And my dad, as a high achiever, of course, wanted me to be a high achiever as well. Now, he wouldn't pressure me to say, you better become like me. I don't ever recall him saying things like that. But because he had a very high standard for himself, he would impose it on me. For example, I remember many moments where I thought I did well in my grades and, you know, where I would get high marks, for example, 4 A's and then 1 B. Instead of saying, hey, this is great, you did 4 A's, he would say, why do you have a B? What can you do to improve that? And so that's the kind of fathering I experienced. And it did help me push myself hard. But of course, it also made me feel inadequate, to be honest. And I've shared this to him, which is why I'm able to share it in this podcast now. And you know, it came to a point where in my 30s, he actually was able to sit me down and apologize, you know, because at a certain point in his journey as a father, he realized that, you know, it wasn't really the best parenting method, but he really didn't have any guide, you know, and back in the 70s when I was growing up. So being able to hear that affirmation was very important. And now in my son's case, this is how I'm connecting the dot.
When I was now, you said you growing up in the 70s. You mean growing up in the 80s, right?
That's I grew up in the 70s.
You were born.
I was born in the 70s, growing through those years. And that was kind of the starting point for my dad. That's when he first became a father, was when I was born. I was the firstborn. So that was the 70s. So still accurate. Haha. So in my own fathering journey, I shared a little bit along in that portion because I started to see that in my own parenting of my son. And, you know, I now had a playbook. You know, I am, as a Christian, I would read my Bible and I learned a lot of these parenting principles from the Bible and from other people speaking about parenting. But even as I learned these things, I saw it leaking out, this desire to make sure that my son would do things excellently. And, you know, I would never say you better be like me, but, you know, when I would see the way that I would be critical, the way that I would push, the way that I would try and help them do things excellent, I realized that a part of how I was raised was now leaking out and it wasn't the parts that were good. So this is where I realized, okay, you know, there is something very important about me being a father that my wife Joy just couldn't do in them. So that's a long answer to your question.
Maybe you can even share how some of our sons were hurt on certain occasions because of the way you'd be hard on them. Especially, I think, our son Elijah, because he was the oldest, so he probably experienced more of that. Because as the years went on, you began to change. But what were some of the things that he specifically said that hurt his feelings?
I think by manner, you know, he shared generally about how I, in the course of my working world and working life, as I tell my kids that, you know, they can talk to me and I'm easily accessible, I will make time. Even when I had a full-time job, I would tell them that they could call me at any point. And so as I opened that door or that opportunity for them to just engage me, my son at some point told me, "Dad, I don't feel like I can open up to you or talk to you." And as I asked him why, it was because he felt like, as opposed to Joy, my wife, who's always affirming in general, I am more critical and I will correct more and I will, you know, tell them what I think can be improved. So that made the environment a lot less inviting, you know, or open for him. And apparently that is what I'm seeing my other sons also say about me. So I realized that is the wound that Joy is talking about.
But you've improved a whole lot. I'm just saying that maybe so that people can relate to what you're sharing, that there were those points probably more before than presently, where you had to recognize that your manner with the boys, because you were hard on them, was hurtful. And then you learn how to balance, right? Being strict and allowing them to push themselves or encouraging them to push themselves, but at the same time, being open with them and accommodating and letting them realize that it was okay to make mistakes. So I think that's the balance that you had to learn. Because I remember even early on, even with the way they would dress, and if they didn't look put together, and if they weren't coordinated looking, you would actually get on them for that. And I felt really badly because in my mind, I'm thinking, this is not a super big deal, but you would make a big deal out of that. Remember that?
Yeah.
And I think that they started to feel conscious of the way they looked at certain points. And then you redeemed it. And eventually you got more relaxed even about that. But I think what was most important, and you can validate this, was you started focusing on mentoring their hearts. Because the outward stuff, teaching them how to be a gentleman, teaching them how to conduct themselves in public and carry themselves, and how to push themselves in terms of sports or athletics or physical strength, and as well as finishing a task or a project, that was good, but those are more external things. What you began to really focus on was their heart. And how did you do that?
Well, I think heart is kind of a ethereal word, right? But I think more of the character, what motivates them to do what they're doing. Right. And a lot of I think what started to change was when I remembered the principle where we need to make sure that we let our children know we love them, not for what they do or how they dress or, you know, whether or not they project a certain image, but instead because they're our children. So I would tell my kids, you know, kids, there's nothing you can do that will make me love you less.
Or you are my favorite people.
And I would affirm that. So when I started first creating that environment where I would remind them that my love for them is not conditional in any behavior or anything that they did, as I reinforced that, I now did what Joy was asking, what you're asking me about, mm-hmm. which is looking at more on the motivation behind what they do rather than what they're just doing. For example, on that area of grooming, right? I don't focus on, oh man, they're not fixing their hair again, although it bothers me honestly, or they don't cut their fingernails. I focus on the character of discipline. and making sure that they're conscientious about these things, because it is a discipline, you know, grooming yourself, trimming your fingernails, all these things, it's a discipline. And sometimes they don't do it just because they're lazy. And so that's what it means to look more to the heart. It is to look more to the motivation behind what they do, right? Versus just the outward actions that you see or you might may or may not like.
How important is it for a father to actually tell his son that you are a man now? Because we did some research on that. And there's actually a point as they transition from childhood to young adult where it's important for you, for the men in the lives of our sons, to come alongside them and affirm their manhood.
Right. So to answer your question, the point that they come to realize they're men, if you are a man right now, I want you to ask yourself that question. When did you know you were a man? And it's not a question that is asked of us men often, but when I first heard it from one of those resources I said early on in this podcast, I realized or I learned that the point in which we see ourselves as men is actually the point where the men that matter in our lives consider us as men. So when my father says, you're a man now, then I'm like, oh, I guess I'm a man now. And I still remember that vividly. My dad, and this is what I loved about him, my dad was very big on like tradition or ceremony, right? Meaning a formality of some sort that will help create a movement or a passage, if you will. So in my 13th birthday and around the time I was graduating, I remember he actually gave me this kit. You know, 13 is when you become, you move towards your puberty and you start growing facial hair and all that. And he gave me a kit with acne cream, with a razor, and he created metaphors for these things. You know, not only were they just practical things I could use, but he used them to show that I'm moving into a new season as a man. I was now moving from a boy to a young man. And then when I went off to college, I don't really recall any significant moment, but when I was about to get married, when I was 25, was the age I got married, I remember him looking me in the eyes and he said, son, this is it. I'm like, what? And he said, I'm letting you go. And I was getting teary-eyed. I'm like, what does that mean? He said, well, you're a man now. You're going to take responsibility for your actions. You're going to start your own family. You're going to provide for them. And so I'm letting you go in that sense. I'm letting you now take charge of your own affairs and your family. Because at that point, obviously, I was going to move out of the house also and all those things. And, you know, there was a little bit of sadness, honestly, when he was saying that. But when I look back, I realized those were important points in my life to signal that, yes, I am a man. And that's my answer to the question, honey, and for all those that are listening. It has to be that as men, if we want our sons to know that they are men, we need to usher that in with similar sort of conversations where they know what that means. And the expectation of what that means is also clear, you know. So that's part of what I've learned.
So I think you mentioned two key points. So one is when they transition from childhood to young adulthood, which is about 13, 14 years old. And then the next one would be when they actually start their own family. And that's important because I think in our society, sometimes parents really like to hold on to their children for forever.
Yes. Right? The helicopter parents. And, they're always hovering around.
And it's kids. Actually not good and healthy for them because it causes the sons to, in a way, I think it's a form of castration where you don't let your son be his own man. And I think as moms, we can be very guilty of that because we hover and we want to make sure that our sons are going to be okay. And somehow that actually makes them less masculine because they don't learn how to fend for themselves. They don't learn how to take responsibility for their mess ups, for their mistakes. And it makes them kind of soft. In fact, that's one of the reasons why when we also had house help for our children growing up, we didn't make our sons dependent on yayas. Mm-hmm. We were very particular about that. We didn't want anybody hovering over them, running around, chasing after them to make sure that they're okay. And I remember when they would fall and get hurt and I would get so concerned, you'd be like, nope, don't worry. There's no blood. They're fine. And they would be wailing. And you would say, and honestly, it was hard for me as a mom. Because a part of me is like, what is wrong with my husband?
What made you back down?
Well, as I did my own research, of course, because I chose to trust you, but as I did my own research, I saw that it's very important for a mom to allow her husband to take over when it comes to mentoring the boys. And there has to be that bit of pushing them in a healthy way and allowing them to get hurt, to rough each other up. That's actually part of being boys. Because I would also get protective, right? And they'd start maybe not hurting each other, but, you know, kind of, what is it? Playful bullying? Well, I don't know how to say it. I don't know if that even can coexist. But I guess the point is that they would tease each other. They'd provoke one another. It would never be to the point of bullying, okay? I just want to make sure that's very clear. And sometimes I would be like, oh, you know, they should stop doing that. But then you would whisper to me, you know what? They're boys. Just let them be boys. And then they learn to work out their differences also. And I think it's important for you to share that when that happens, that transition from 13 to 14 or 12 to 13, that you actually have a rite of passage. And you've done that with two of our sons.
Sure.
You took them. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I will share that. But before we do, you might want to stay tuned and check out these other shows from Podcast Network Asia.
Psst, kailan ka last nag-joyride? Alam mo yung may kasama ka, sobrang tawa lang kayo ng tawa, sabaw yung usapan nyo, kahit saan kayo dali ng trip nyo, ayos lang. Tapos biglang tatahimik, lalalim yung usapan, magiging intellectual, emotional. Ngayon, kahit stuck ka mag-isa sa bahay, sa traffic, sa trabaho, pwede ka nang sumabay sa Joyride of Intellectual Wall Conversations sa podcast kong Sabayan with Victor, produced by Podcast Network Asia. Sabay na sa Sabayan with Victor.
All right, so we're back, and as we carry on this conversation, you wanted me to talk about the rite of passage. Joy and I are having a conversation about fathering and how important this is, and we've focused this on sons, although this is also similar in the area of raising the daughters, because the role of a father, whether towards the son or the daughter, has been overlooked through the years, and in many different research studies shown that it has been one of the leading causes of family breakdowns, and the children also messing up their lives because of an absentee father. So you know, obviously if you are a single mom right now listening to this, there is hope. We, you know, as Christians, we love to say that God is really their father. But for those that are listening with both parents in place, parenting, then we are reinforcing the need for a father. So the single moms out there, you may look to father figures to your children. It could be your own father, a brother, or someone maybe even in your church group or community, or someone you trust that can play that role, because there is that need still, right? Especially for the boys, the sons. So the rite of passage that we wanted to talk about is inspired by that World Needs a Father, Cassie Karstens, where because of this critical point in a boy's life, not just in the area of their body changing, but also in their identity formation, we need to be able to give them an experience similar to what my dad actually did with me, where you allow them to experience, you know, what it means to be a man. And as they experience that, there has to be a sense of challenge. There has to be a sense of fulfillment on their part that they were able to achieve something through difficult circumstances. And there has to be that affirmation from the men around them that he is now a young man. That's what the rite of passage is about. In the African context, which is where Cassie Karstens comes from, he talks about their own practices there as a culture. But we don't think it's that adaptable to the Philippine context. So, you know, we've obviously tried to use the essence of it and then create our own. For example, for me, what I have done is I've allowed them, or I've brought them on a climb, and not just, you know, a quick hike up a hill, but the first one with Elijah, we went up the tallest mountain in the Philippines called Mount Apo. It was a four day, three night trek. That was tough. We had to do preps beforehand, some conditioning. We had to make sure we had the right gear, coordinated with the right guide. And the guide that took us up was actually the first Filipino to climb Mount Everest. So, you know, as we did that whole preparation, you know, if you ask him, he will talk about how that experience gave him a lot of the character traits that we want to form as men in a 4-day journey. And he did get that sense of challenge and the sense of fulfillment from overcoming. That is so important. So that's what we would encourage. And then I had the men in his life. So my father, you know, my father-in-law, my brothers, and we had them write letters to my son, and I read them to him at the summit to affirm again this rite of passage. He was now moving from a boy becoming a young man. And so he would take on greater responsibilities for his actions and things like that. So that's an example of the rite of passage.
Right. So after that, he actually wrote you a letter. Do you remember? I think it was either for your Father's Day or for your birthday. And it was a very, very touching letter. I'm sure you kept it because you're so sentimental. But he said there, you know, Dad, I thank you for teaching me what it means to be a man. And I really look up to you. That's the gist, right? It was a very, very tender letter. But I remember that from then on, you realize how important it is that you are the one that ushers our sons into that transitional season of childhood to young adulthood. And then we don't call them teenagers because we expect that by the time they hit 13, 14, they've actually been equipped to make wise decisions and take responsibility for their actions. Because if we say teenager, it kind of makes them feel like they can linger in a sort of limbo stage where they're allowed to just goof off and not take things seriously. But the expectation is once they hit 14...
Because of the stereotypes surrounding the term teenager, right?
Which didn't even happen until the 1960s. So it's a very recent term. Reader's Digest actually came up with that term in the 60s. So once they hit 13, 14, then you have certain expectations of them that you want them to own up to. And I think that's been very healthy for them, right? Because, for example, when they make mistakes, now you expect them to be the ones to fix and find solutions to the mistakes they make. It's not about us rescuing them from their wrong choices anymore. They have to learn to deal with the consequences. And then you gave them bigger and bigger responsibilities. You would actually tell Elijah and Eden, okay, guys, while we're out, you guys are in charge and make sure that your younger siblings follow the rules and we trust you. And that is so significant because I remember a conversation with Eden, and when we were about to leave to go somewhere, and I said, okay, Eden, you're in charge. Okay, just make sure that, you know, your siblings go to bed a certain time. If you want to do some stuff online, that's fine. We trust you. And you know what he said? He said, you know, Mom, actually, when you tell me that, when you say that you trust me, it makes me more conscious of not wanting to make the wrong decision, not wanting to make a mistake.
Yeah, and I think it's very important that you bring that up, honey, because, you know, for the moms out there, as you raise sons, what I'm echoing in what Joy is doing is you obviously have to walk alongside your husband in the same direction, affirm that masculinity, that manhood. And that's what she's doing, right? She's saying you are in charge. And what a powerful way to learn it because of how Eden responded to you. So again, just a great reminder.
But you know, there really is no concrete definition of what a man is. So if you were to put it into a phrase or a sentence that people can latch onto, what does it mean to be a man?
Yeah. So I think the answer to that question is found, you know, is based on the definition for many of the things we do in life as a whole, right? So are we going to look at a guidebook? Are we going to look at the dictionary for us? And we've shared this very openly throughout these podcasts. As Christians, our guide is really God's word because we believe that he's the designer of our kids and he's the designer of masculinity. So to answer your question in a few words, it's the things that you will see spelled out in the Bible. For example, a lot of the character traits that you would see modeled by Jesus, where he is both tender but also tough, where he is, you know, you will see that even in the New Testament when Paul writes, the role of a man in marriage is to take charge, to take initiative, to be accountable. So these are many of the different character traits, if you will, that are the roles of a man and therefore define what a man should be based, again, on that guide. So I would think those would be some of the key things.
I remember that we came across this book, and it's called Raising a Modern Day Knight by Robert Lewis. And this is where we also got the idea of the importance of a rite of passage. You know, when knights were knighted, right? And he says here, a real man is one who rejects passivity, accepts responsibility, leads courageously, and expects the greater reward, meaning he's looking to God to reward him for the things that he chooses to do. So I think this is a good way to frame it, because these are the issues that we deal with now in our society, where men tend to be passive, even in the way that they lead in their family, parent their children, and then accepting responsibility. A lot of men now, you know, they make wrong choices. And for example, they get somebody pregnant and they they don't accept that responsibility. They just kind of ditch the woman, and she has to deal with the consequences and lead courageously. It's all about, you know how, let's say when we are, maybe I can illustrate it. Let's say when we are going to walk on the sidewalk, and this is a very simple illustration, and you're always like, go on my, what do you say?
Safe side.
Go on my safe side. And sometimes it annoys me because I feel like, you know, I'm fine. I can walk wherever I want to. But when I stop to think about it, I think that's something we need to affirm in the men in our lives, that they do want to protect, to take care of the people whom they love. And that, I think, is one way that a man can lead courageously, where they want to make sure that their wife, their children are safe, protected. So even when it comes to making choices, they're not going to choose to make stupid choices, because they know that there's a big responsibility on their shoulders, and they have to be careful about and wise about the choices they make. And then lead courageously means that they're not afraid also to make difficult decisions, even if it may not always be convenient, because they are the leader. And then the last one, expecting the greater reward, God's reward. I think that's all about maybe what you were talking about earlier, the motivation for why men will do the things that they do. Did you want to speak to that?
Yeah. As far as the motivation for why men do what they're supposed to do, again, I talked about how it's so important to have a basis. And that basis for us has been God's word. You know, when you look at many of the examples of the Bible and how men are actually asked to bear sacrificially, you know. So we share all these things because we want to make sure that as you parent, or as you as dads carry on your roles with your sons. One final note I wanted to add is this resource from James Dobson, and he talks about raising boys. It's a fairly older book, so the context is a little bit different, but the principles I think still ring true, where he said, especially today, where the gender lines are becoming so blurry. And in fact, the question that Joy had earlier about, you know, what does it mean to be a man, is actually something that many of us will step back and say, yeah, what does it mean? I mean, especially today, right? So it's so important that even as you look at the definitions or the attributes specified in your basis or your guide for life, if you will, which for us is the Bible, you want to now make sure that you reinforce those gender stereotypes even. It's so important to do that so that it becomes clear. To illustrate this, in his book, James Dobson talks about how at some point there were toy stores where, as an experiment, they tried to create a generic toy section where you kind of intermixed toys for boys and girls, right? So this is one of the gender stereotypes. And as they intermixed all the toys, in general, where there's no more, these are boys' toys, these are girls' toys, what they experienced was a sharp decline in the business. So they were shocked, you know, because they thought it would be easier, it would not reinforce any of these things. But the reality is there are differences between boys and girls. And instead of trying to blur that, if you celebrate it, then you win. So the toy stores changed it back, brought back the sections, and voila, business boomed again. So I share this to once again reinforce the fact that as we raise our children, and as dads here, if we're raising sons, even if it seems old school, quote unquote, we need to still hold on to some of these stereotypes. And the stereotypes, let's
here's where we need to draw the line. The stereotypes should not be these cultural stereotypes, right? Colors that are for boys or girls. You need to go back to biblical definitions and character traits of being a man, where we talked about
being a servant leader,
being
for
a servant
example.
Leader, right?
Nurturing and nourishing.
Nurturing, nourishing. That's right. And so that is so important, honey.
Yeah, and I think that this is something you've talked to our sons about, these three aspects. What does it mean to really obey God and follow God? What can you do with your talents and abilities, what God has built into you? And then what kind of woman to look for in someone you're going to marry? And I think those are conversations that you've had with our sons and continue to have with them, because you're the best person to do it. And they respond to that in you. And the one thing I wanted to say was, I don't think that we just introduce all these concepts to them once they hit the young adult years. We actually talk to them way before, even while they're younger, in preparation, because once they start dealing with their hormones and going through that season where sometimes they can be a little bit lost and funky, it's good for them to already have anchors to fall back on. With our third son, Titus, you've tried to be very intentional with him because you noticed that he was gravitating more towards his sisters. Do you want to talk about that a little bit and how you decided that you're going to make him your special project?
Yeah, so I talked about the stereotypes, right? In general, one of the stereotypes is the fact that, you know, generally boys are rougher. And so as I was reading James Dobson's book on boys, I said, okay, with my son, Titus, obviously, I did not hurt him or harm him, but I would squeeze him tight and tickle him hard and kind of roll around and pretend to wrestle with him. And he loved those moments, you know, when I would grab him and he'd be like, Daddy. And then I'd be like, all right, Titus, tap, make me tap out, make me tap out. And he would try and go over me, and then we'd have those moments. I also tried to be more intentional in spending time. I think that is one of the overlooked areas also. If we want to strengthen or reinforce the fact that they are men, we need to have them be around the men who we want them to be like, right? And who better than us as fathers. So I would spend more time with him intentionally, just one-on-one. I'd walk with him. I'd be like, Titus, do this with me. Or let's build this thing together. I would start to do things that he also enjoyed. He likes building and tinkering. And as I did that, more and more, he developed a toughness. Instead of being all, hi, you know, being with the girls and literally speaking even like that, hi, mom, hi, dad. He'd be like, hi, dad, hi, mom. He was changing in the way he was speaking. He was becoming more assertive, more confident, which we were really being able, we were noticing. And as those things came out, of course, part of the lesson is to affirm it. So I said, Titus, I'm so proud of you. You're speaking up. You're giving your opinion. You know, you're able to respond even as people are challenging your thoughts. I think that's very good and very healthy. So, you know, he would puff up his chest and say, thanks, Dad. You know, and I'm doing more of that even now as I speak to you guys, because from that point, he's come a long way. Obviously, he loves being with his brothers now, and they rough each other up, and his brothers are getting annoyed with him also, because he will not back down, even if his brothers are double his size.
yeah, I wanted to bring up something, because I think that when you say that you mentor the boys, it doesn't mean that you make them to be like you.
Yep.
Because they still have their specific uniquenesses and identities that you also try to bring out in them. And maybe this is an area where sometimes fathers think that my son has to be exactly like me, you know, do the same profession, be the same way. But that's all our children are unique. And we've seen that even with our boys, that they're very different from one another. One is more into mechanical engineering. Another one is more into botany and plants. And do you recall, because Eden's into plants and botany and zoology, and at first you weren't too excited about that, right?
Nope.
But because you wanted him to do more maybe sports and things like that. And he was more into art as well. He's the more artistic one among our sons. However, you really affirmed his hobbies and his passions. And it wasn't like it made him less masculine, because your affirmation of him and your coming alongside him and spending time with him still allowed him to really develop his masculinity. but without compromising his uniqueness. And I think that's how it's been for our other sons. You respect their uniquenesses and you want to make sure that they do pursue their interests, their bents, and you're supportive of that. And that's mattered a lot to them. Do you remember when you take Eden to go plant shopping? And yeah. He really enjoyed that.
He really loved it, even through this pandemic, right?
Do you know that before he would tell me, I don't really want to be alone with Dad. Do you remember that? But he changed. As you spent more and more time with him, then he began to trust you more with his heart and he felt like he could open up to you about more stuff. And so I think that was a good breakthrough also for him and for you.
Yes, for sure. So, so again, we are basically sharing the importance of fathers. And if you have sons, how important it is to mentor your sons. And you know, we could mirror this in the same way about moms towards their daughters, but the reality is I think moms are generally, their hearts are generally more turned towards their kids. So we want to especially highlight the need for dads. And you know, with those resources you mentioned earlier, once again, it's shocking to see how the reality is fathers play a very special and significant role and it has been neglected. It's the truth. Mm-hmm. So our passion is to make sure that, you know, us dads, we do our part. I'm not a perfect father by any stretch of the imagination. I am a work in progress. But because I'm aware of these things, I'm trying to prevent the same mistakes that I've experienced and we see. And, you know, Lord willing, my sons will be better men than I am. That's kind of my goal, and that they will raise up a next generation of sons also who will be better men than they are. So thanks for joining us. Any final words, darling?
Yeah, I think this is where it's also important for us as wives, as moms, to support what our husbands are trying to do and affirm their leadership in the home and allow our sons to see that we respect our husbands. Because, you know, how kids form their sense of identity, sense of masculinity and femininity really starts in the home. And the great thing is, if fathers are very intentional with their sons, then eventually, as the sons grow up and get married and have families, it makes it so much easier for the women to respond to that leadership. You know, the kind of leadership that's not overbearing or not lording it over others, but a man who really chooses to love his family unconditionally, unselfishly, chooses to serve them and protect them and desires their greatest good and does everything he can to really be a good provider. Come on, us women, that's what we look for, right? That's what we really want deep down inside. But I think the problem in our society is that we, as women, we start to panic when we don't see that in the men and we start to take over. And that actually somehow disrupts the whole ecosystem that God designed. So it takes both, right? It takes you as a husband trying to do your best to lead our sons and mentor them and raise them up to be God-fearing men who will do their role to the best of their ability. But it also takes the women alongside the men and in partnership with you, for example, me and you as husband and wife, that I would also affirm what you're doing and affirm that manhood in our sons by not trying to be overbearing or take over or hover over them.
Yep. So thanks, honey. Thanks, everybody, for joining us for another episode of
Family Unboxed,
brought to you by Podcast Network Asia and Podmetrics. We hope to catch you in the next one. Bye.
See you guys.
The views and opinions expressed by the podcast creators, hosts, and guests do not necessarily reflect the official policy and position of Podcast Network Asia. Any content provided by the people on the podcast are of their own opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, ethnic group, club, organization, company, individual, or anyone or anything.